Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, Ray Hager and I speak with Christian Kaliani. She's a candidate for governor on the Democratic side. For the whole show on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
We've made great progress over the past 4 years.
From building bridges
to building small businesses.
From homegrown entrepreneurs
and community pride
to new innovations.
From economic development
to future mayors.
We're a true beacon of success that continues to thrive. But we need to remember it's all about shaping our future for the next generation and meeting the challenges of tomorrow. I'm Hillary Sheevy, and I would appreciate your support on June 12th.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
Pro Group Management offers workers' comp services to a growing number of industries. As businesses grow and change with the times, the need for a solid workers' comp program must be flexible and up to date. The evolving nature of regulations can make staying ahead of complex tasks challenging. But Pro Group Management simplifies the work so your industry can move forward and succeed. Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
Truck drivers are some of the hardest working people you'll meet, delivering over 70% of America's freight and 92% of Nevada's. When there's a natural disaster, they're delivering critical supplies to help those communities recover and rebuild. Every sector of the economy and our nation's military rely on truck drivers. So let's take a moment to say thank you. On the open road or city streets, our truck drivers are rolling to make our economy and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shad, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're always pleased to welcome back to the program Christian Kaliani, better known as Chris G across the state, running for governor, and also is a Clark County commissioner. Pleasure to have you on the program.
Pleasure.
Let's start out with a question that I asked your main opponent. If we look to the past in Nevada history, which previous governor do you respect the most for their positions?
I'd say a Grant Sawyer or Mike O'Callaghan. Mike was the first teacher to serve as governor. He was a union supporter. He was tough but passionate like I am, so I kind of mirrored that. He was my neighbor, so I used to get counsel from him and yelled at from time to time. But I think Grant also had a very unique passion that he brought, but it was a quieter piece. But I think Michael Callahan overall.
Now, if you become governor, you're going to call me at 4 o'clock in the morning and yell at me?
Oh, he did that to my husband all the time. And his was 3 o'clock, so you must have been the later call. I might.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. As you know, no matter who wins the election, Governor Sandoval will write the next budget. Chief of Staff Mike Wilden was on the program, and he said that they're going to present a budget the governor would have been proud to present himself. So given that, what would be your top three priorities to make sure that we're in the next budget?
Education, mental health, and promotion for small and diversified businesses in the long run. But I also want to keep the CNCs, culture and conservation. I think that those are very key pieces to building a community and quality of life. And I think, Governor, I met with Brian, actually, because you know I served with him. I wanted to know what his legacies were, and I do think he tried to do his best he could for education funding. We just never got there on the per pupil side of it, and we didn't fix the formula, and that still needs to be fixed. More importantly, though, I think he'll be known as someone that really focused on economic development, so I'm hoping the package has some of that, because as the new governor, you come in and you can make modifications, but you literally have 2 months to do it. And I think Mike also said that there's about a $500 million increase already right within the budget. And so I think they recognize that we're already budget shortfalled on education, around $400 million. That may be plugging some of it. The pot tax is up, so maybe more of that needs to go into education, as well as the percentage that went into the rainy day fund needs to be permanently put into education as well.
All right. So what kind of increase in per pupil funding would you look for?
I'd like to get to the national average. I mean, and they may have to be phased in. I mean, I'm realistic. You know, I served on Ways and Means. I was known as a budget hawk. Once I get the budget to look at, and I would hope to counsel with Mike Wilden, who I served with or worked with as well, on how they drove their numbers. But we really, it's time to stop excusing it. We have to fix the formula. If your house is not built on the right foundation, then everything from that is skewed. And so what's happened is the formula has not been fixed, so the foundation has not been fixed. We need to do that first, then determine what that dollar amount needs to be. And you may not have as many categoricals as you need. You may still need some, but you can plow that in so that it's evenly dispersed, and then you hold harmless, which is what we've always done in the legislature when we did funding changes.
All right, so obviously the next question is, with already knowing that there's going to be a shortfall, how would you fund both the shortfall and education?
Well, I don't assume that there's a shortfall yet, because until you know what the priorities, his priorities may be very different from mine. And when you reorganize those priorities, you can find new dollars. And you know how I was in the Ways and Means Committee. It was, if you can't justify who your clientele is, where they're going, and how they do it, then your budget doesn't even need to be funded. So I need to go through that first. I don't want to anticipate what might or might not be, because that would be somewhat irresponsible. The harder part, as you know, is we have to plan for 2 years out. And any governor will tell you, once we did that 120 days, we really restricted our opportunity to be able to fix things we messed up the session before or plan properly. And I think for businesses, they want the proper planning that's out there. That helps them succeed in the long run.
All right, so that sounds like you're suggesting that we go to every year for the legislature.
Oh, yeah, we should start that again. Bob Price carried it every session for about 12. It always passed the Assembly. It just never got out of the Senate.
And so you would look at, a 60-day session?
We recommended at that time through the study committee that had been in play the Utah model, which was 120 and 60, correct. That way you fix something if you passed a law and it had unintended consequences, like what's happening with the opioid bill. You can put that together and make those fixes then, and then you don't have harm continuing. And it allows you to look at your budget, whether you were predicted your numbers correctly and where you might want to allocate additional revenue.
You know, Chris, you talk about you'd want to take the per pupil funding to the national average. Just first off, that doesn't seem plausible because it's such a wide gap. How much would that cost? Would it be like $800 million or...
I don't know what the cost would actually be, Ray, but what you look at is if our goal is to establish that, you then lay a pathway on how you move there. The pot tax needs to go in, and the tax that the voters voted on in 2009, which went into the general fund and didn't go into education, and that was supposed to go into education, pretty much once you put that into that programming, you're dealing with where, not only your per pupil, you're dealing with your ELL, your autistic, your special ed kids, and that's where we really need to make sure we're dispersing it correctly. As you know, the special ed units were always done as based on a teacher in a classroom, but they never funded the salary at what the salary actually was, so they never had that. So then you ate into the general ed program, which wasn't fair either. Then you were pitting regular ed kids against special ed kids, and nobody wants that, and nobody wins that way. So we have an obligation, and that obligation is to find the money. Can't is a swear word in my classroom, and we can't get things done if we work together.
Okay, if you need the money, would you be willing to lower the threshold on the commerce tax to include more businesses as a way to raise this money?
I don't want to do anything that harms anybody, whether it's working families or businesses. So until, again, I see that budget where the priorities were put into play, where there's savings that could come in, I'm not going to scare anybody that way. I want to be reasonable and realistic on how you deal with it. But I do commend Governor Sandoval for the commerce tax, and I do call on Adam Laxalt to overturn his willingness to get rid of that. That's a $400 million shortfall if he gets rid of that. So, you know what? I don't agree with that either.
If he was elected governor, how would he get rid of it with the projected majorities in both the Senate and the Assembly?
I think
Assembly?
He'd have some very difficulty, so he'd have to learn to finally work across the aisles like I learned to do. I had good mentors. I had Bill Raggio, I had Jan Evans, Vivian Freeman, John Carpenter. I learned with some of the statesmen and women in this state, and I don't think Adam Laxalt, because he hasn't lived here but 6 years, even knew who those people really were and didn't learn from them. So, yeah, he would have a challenge, but he's on the record saying he'd get rid of it, and that is irresponsible in the long run.
When you bring that up, in terms of statesmen, do you regret the fact that we have term limits?
I never supported term limits. Yes, I do, because you've given lobbyists too much control. And remember, John Ralston said I was the bane of the lobbyists. So, you've taken it away. When we're a citizen legislature, we really need to take a look at that part of it. But that's unfortunately what passed.
But also, in addition to the lobbyists, the governor has extreme power, too.
True, but you still have to work. To me, even though I was progressive from day one, I always tried to do my homework, prove that I had listened to everything. I listened to, there's never two sides to an issue. You're lucky if there's 10, right? So I always made sure that I listened to everybody and tried to find those threads of commonality. And I think any governor should take that opportunity, because in the long run, you can't get anything passed if you don't have the houses doing that. And whether it's both controlled by Republicans or both controlled by Democrats or either one, you still got to take the time to use common sense and sit down and work with people.
And you see an example of that with the Republican Congress in Washington, D.C., and a Republican president, and yet the achievement level...
They're so dysfunctional, and we're luckily, we've had a couple of special sessions where we've had that kind of behavior, but generally, we respected each other, and we always knew the next day there was going to be another vote on something. I used to cook dinner at house for Democrats and Republicans, because I lived in my little studio, and I loved bringing people together, and the rule was no work talk. And you break bread together, and you learn about what's their children, what's going on with your animals, what's happening at home. If you build that relationship, you have so much more of an opportunity to work things through.
You're talking about having the legislature meet every year.
Possibly.
Okay. What then happens to the citizen legislature? Because if you're meeting every year, a lot of people that serve won't be able to serve because they can't get away from their jobs every year. It's a stretch every other year. What do you do about that?
I wouldn't presume that. Number one, it takes five years because it's a constitutional amendment. So it would have to pass the legislature twice and then go to a vote of the people, and the people would weigh in at that point. But it is still, in my mind, we'd still be a citizen legislature. I don't think that that's the bigger issue right now. To me, it's making sure that we have quality people that are running and have an opportunity to run. And that's what I'm directing, you know, my attention to as I'm going across the state, is I make sure I try to meet the new candidates that are running, Democrat and Republican, because I want to know who's there and what their lives are like. And some of them are small business men and women. Some of them are veterans. Some of them are retired. You want that broad breadth. I've always liked that part. We don't have enough teachers in there. I think there's only two at one time with Bernie and everybody. We had like 8 teachers that were there, police, fire. You want that broad breadth so that you're always taking into consideration public service as well as the impact on businesses in the long run.
All right, let's take a break. More with Chris G, running for governor, when we come back.
Tamarack Junction is South Reno's hotspot with over 450 of the latest slots and video games. Sully Sports Bar, the Dining Car Restaurant, William Hill Sportsbook, and the Tamarack Steakhouse and Lounge. We're just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
Yeah.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
Hi, I'm Eric Robnett, owner of Home Energy Experts. Has this ever happened to you?
Honey, did you remember to turn down the thermostat?
Forgetting to set the temperature? Not fun. We can help. Our new smart thermostat keeps the temperature set for your comfort all by itself.
I'm feeling hot now.
To increase your comfort, go to homeenergyexperts.com for details. That's homeenergyexperts.com.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
The Tamarack Junction Steakhouse is known for signature steaks, handcrafted cocktails, and world-class wines. Join us Thursdays and Friday nights from 4:30 to 6:30 in the Steakhouse Lounge for live music, gourmet plates, and well-priced wines, just north of the Summit Mall on South Virginia.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Chris Giunculiani. She's the Clark County Commissioner running for governor on the Democratic side.
Chris, there was a poll recently, results published in the Las Vegas Review-Journal, mm-hmm. that showed you and Steve Sisolak in a dead heat. Mm-hmm. You got on TV, at least up in Reno, a lot later than he did. Right. Do you see this as as maybe gaining momentum? How do you feel about being in a dead heat when early voting has already started?
I'm thrilled because I didn't spend $6 million. I've been outspent almost 6-1. And so that's one thing the viewers should know is this race is not for sale. It's going to be won on grassroots, me going out. I've been reconnecting in all the rural counties. I haven't neglected any part of the state. I lived in Carson City for 16 years, half part-time, so even though I'm from southern Nevada, I have that connection. But when I was president of the teachers union, I chose to live in my motorhome. So for 4 years, I drove this entire state. And by 1991, I'd been to every school that had been built but two. No one else out there in this race can say you have that kind of a connection. So I went back and reconnected. I borrowed my neighbor's motorhome, and we did 12 counties in 4 days, held town halls, listened about economic development, education, health care needs that are out there, transportation. We have a huge infrastructure need that really would put people back to work and start doing some economic diversification for our rural counties. I would love to look at multimodal transit that needs to come into play. We need light rail. I-80 needs, there's issues that are going on there because of the technology park. They're actually looking at extending a rail line right into that. I love rail, so I think that there's also an opportunity to do a study of all the rail lines that are still out there that have been just dropped. They're just sitting there to see what kind of interconnectivity could that bring, some economic boom, but also get people moving back and forth across the state. You just lost the bus system run to Winnemucca and Elko up here, right? So we have people that are stranded within their communities that we really have to deal with.
Okay, when you talk about gaining on Sisolak, excuse me, one of the things that confuses me about one of your ads is that you say that Sisolak supported the, you know, $1 billion for the Raiders stadium, and at the same time blocked funding for Reno schools. How does a county commissioner from Clark County block funding for Reno schools? Well, I didn't get the connection.
Here's
there
what happened
that.
There. The special session was called by Governor Sandoval. He called the session to actually do two things. One was the Raiders stadium, the public financing of $750 million. He also had a second bill drafted for 0.12% to fund schools because they already knew, to add some millions of dollars, and they already knew they were budgeted shortfalled. And Sisolak threatened to call a press conference. He went to both caucuses and said, "How dare you?" He was furious that the money would have also gone to the north and to the rurals from southern Nevada. And, you know, there's fair share issues, but that's not one of them. This was about kids, and so the governor withdrew that bill and never even dropped it in the special session.
Okay, I just didn't understand that. You talk about you want to put all pot taxes to education, correct? Okay, on the 10% retail tax, Governor Sandoval wanted it to go to education.
Yes, he did.
But the legislature changed it to put in the rainy day fund.
He could get the votes for the Republicans, so that the deal that was cut was to create a rainy day fund, put the money into that, and the governor did made up the $40 million through the general fund. So in my mind, they did get it there. I think what's more important to the public, though, is they were promised that 10% would go to schools. It should never have been diverted into something else to look like a shell game. So what I'm saying is that I will fence that off and say that goes directly in and not through the general fund. Because many of these budget votes that we ask people to commit to education funding, that's a commitment to them. They voted for that because of it. And so to have it diverted where it only it doesn't supplement, it supplants. They take, we got $100 million here, I'll take it out here and I put it here. There was no increase for education, even though that's what the voters were led to believe. So that's what I'm talking about on that part of it.
12 years ago was the last big study I recall. Well, we were about $6 billion behind in terms of infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that number has grown dramatically since then. So you were talking about infrastructure in terms of I-80, and you were talking about railroads. And I know there's been talk on this program from NNDA about Hawthorne potentially being in line for some kind of rail connection to the Port of Los Angeles. But what would your highest priorities be in terms of infrastructure? Would it be in southern Nevada? Where would it be?
Oh, it would be statewide. I think we've already identified. I serve on RTC in southern Nevada, so I have Rudy is part of our board, so he always updates us. We have the I-11 corridor that's going forward that will benefit the entire state. You just need to make sure where that next phase goes to so you don't cut out small business access in the long run like you had to deal with in Carson City when they were putting the bypass. So we have to be sensitive on that part. But there's road needs for maintenance. and then there's needs for actually making sure that we're letting consumers be able to travel as well as goods and services. And that's why when I was out in Ely, we started talking about the railroad lines that really are just still sitting there. And so a gentleman's actually mapping some of that for me right now so we could take a look at some interconnectivity that comes into play. I think that not only is a job creator, it can be an economic development issue. And Hawthorne is being talked. There's several logistics ports that we should be taking a look at. All of those, when you're looking at road structure and infrastructure, there's different pools of dollars that you can take to. So we have the fuel revenue index that's actually coming in a little bit higher. But for example, as much as I support EV vehicles and you know the electric vehicles, they're still on our roadway and they're still taking up our turf, so to speak. There should be some compensation from them because right now it's only people that pay gas that are paying for that.
What would you think would be fair? Because you're right that electronic vehicles are using the roadways and causing wear and tear, but they're not paying anything.
Right, and that came up last session and the session before, I believe. I have not looked at those bills, but that's something that some legislators have mentioned that they want to take a look at, and so I'll let them do their homework and bring that to me as governor. But more importantly, it's about our environment, the quality air, and the time as well, and that's why we really should be looking at multimodal, working closer with our local governments so that as they build smart cities and smart counties, we have a better partnership from state government. There may be grants that we could qualify for that could pay pass through. So create innovation, create an infrastructure pool. There's some bond indebtedness that could be possibly used both for school construction, safety of schools, and for some of our infrastructure pieces. So there's different things that we could take a look at. Years ago, I worked with Ann O'Connell, Senator O'Connell, and we tried to pass a piece of legislation. It just didn't go, but I just found it the other day, and it was to take some of the state's bond indebtedness, which didn't increase anything, but it actually redirected the dollars to school construction, which I think we need to take a look at now, especially with all the shootings that are going on.
All right, let's take a break. More with Christy when we come back.
Dimitri Prine here for Design Outdoor. Come visit Design Outdoor's store and backyard to see our wide selection of fire pits, barbecues, and pizza ovens, natural stone water features, and fountains, and frostproof pottery. Our store and backyard are located at 11600 South Virginia, just north of DeMonte Ranch Parkway. Visit designoutdoor.com or call us at 851-9499.
I can't do it. Stupid, like my mom.
We can't do anything at Mommy's because you won't pay child support.
Dad said you cheated, and he's not even sure he's my dad.
Mommy said you left both of us, so she isn't going to let me see you.
I look just like my father.
I'm divorce attorney Marilyn York, and I may represent men, but hate has no gender, only casualties. Please, stop sacrificing your children in your war against your ex.
Hi, I'm Dave Newman. Remember me? I used to be the house detective, and now I'm a realtor, full-time at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates. A lot of people ask me, how's the market? You know what? It's fantastic. If you're even kicking around the idea of buying or selling, give me a call. Let's talk about it. Call me at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates and just ask for the guy who used to be the house detective, Dave Newman.
Everyone is talking about opioids, but they're not the only drugs that can be harmful if taken in large quantities or not as prescribed. You also need to be aware of side effects from anxiety drugs, muscle relaxants, sleep aids, and stimulants. Mixing prescription drugs with other drugs or alcohol can be dangerous. If you take Ambien with a glass of wine, it may be enough to stop you from breathing. Prescribed drugs can be just as dangerous as illegal drugs. Take medications only as directed.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Chris June Kaliani. She's a Clark County Commissioner running for governor.
You know, Chris, we were just talking about school safety in the, well, you were talking about school safety in the last segment. Governor Sandoval has, in the wake of the Parkland High School shooting, Governor Sandoval commissioned a 25-member commission on school safety. Mm-hmm. They are going to bring their recommendations on school safety to the governor on August 1st. Of course, he's going to be leaving office, so any getting these things done is going to fall on the next governor. How do you feel about the commission? Would you support what they've come up with? Do you have to wait and see how much money are you willing to put into school safety?
All good questions, but as a special ed middle school teacher, keeping our kids safe is my number one priority. I want their parents to feel that the schools are also safe. So part of, we'll look at what the recommendations. They just added a teacher. A teacher wasn't even on there, and I know they had a panel of students that came in, and the students made two different types of recommendations, one on safety and one on emotional needs. And so Dale Urquiaga, who's heading that up, actually split them into two work groups so that we can look at social worker needs, mental health components, behavioral counseling. The fact that an elementary counselor here in Reno, just 2 weeks ago on a Sunday afternoon, I had a town hall, she counsels 750 kids. That's insane to try to figure out how you're going to be there to know what's going on. If somebody's being bullied, what the impact is. So school safety's two different pieces, so I commend them for looking at it in that way. I do think that there are things you can do through design. Many of our schools have fences, but not all of them, but the fences are easily hopped and easy to get in. But you also have to look at fire code. You don't want to make sure that you make the kids hostage in a building if a fire outbreaks, too. So all of that, but looking at camera sightings, looking at where your lighting goes in. Metro is smart about this, but I would say gaming is probably the best. They've got the eyes in the sky. They know how to look at that technology, so hopefully they're part of that committee. If not, I would like to involve them in that part of security looking. And I think there's a better way to get it where you're being more strategic and you use technology in a way we'd never use technology as well.
And that's where we have to leave it. For now, we look forward to you coming back.
Thank you, I will.
Thank you so much for being
here. I will win
here.
The primary after June 12th.
And we'll be right back.
A bird's eye captures its surroundings at different heights. At Brian Culpa Photography, we can make your imagination soar over buildings, parks, cityscapes, and beyond. Brian's images tell the story and get the job done. If you need a new perspective to tell your story, contact Brian today. Brian Culpa Photography. Experience the bird's eye view at brianculpaphotography.com.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion, for romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
Take a look at Pro Group Management and see how your workers' comp requirements can be met head-on. By taking a proactive approach, Pro Group can assure that your company is meeting or exceeding state and federal standards. As you move forward in your industry, Pro Group moves with you, simplifying regulatory tasks, clearing the way so you can get the job done, and look to your future success. Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
As always, you can watch Nevada Newsmakers 24 hours a day at NevadaNewsmakers.com. You can also download podcasts of the show free of charge from iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you on the next podcast.